sort of testing media, the purified protein from bacteria, or the whole plant product itself. And it's mostly due to the difficulties in obtaining the quantities that you need for these tests, and that's pretty much the main reason why that's done. And in a manner similar to chemical testing, it's something that can be mixed into the soil via the water, usually with a buffer, or directly into the soil, which doesn't create as a homogeneous mixture as using it with the water method. And in addition, we've also used it with just mixing it directly with the diet as well, and that's in the case of the springtails. We'll mix it in with the yeast diet. The whole plant material, we've run some tests where we have taken the whole plant material and incorporated it as a component to the soil in the mixtures for both earthworm and springtails. And we've also done it where we have mixed it in the food as well. And some of the considerations for a genetically modified protein, I mean a genetically engineered crop, the proteins, it's not something that the end user is typically going to be able to have control over as far as dosing. He can't misdose this or not dilute it properly, or there's not really a label per se to make some of those errors as in that you could with a chemical product. And the mode of action, again, this is something that's destroying stomach cells, and so the main effect is starvation. And it's not something that happens in a very rapid amount of time. It's something, that's why typically you want these tests to happen in like a 7-day or you certainly don't want something just 24 hours with this kind of thing. And that's something that's also been mentioned in previous talks in this symposia. Some other things to just consider is some sort of bioaccumulation, the fact that what's the effect of something like this if years after years this kind of crop is grown in these fields and it keeps getting mixed up into the soil. There have been EPA papers that have mentioned that some of these degradation rates for these BT proteins are along some sort of half-life at around 3 days. So it's not really expected to be in the soil for very long based on some of those papers I've seen. So this is just an example from an extension publication about how much material is actually going to be incorporated into the soil as far as to generate some sort of idea of what kind of rates to set for dosing. And so effectively, you would expect about 0.0018 kilograms of plant material per kilogram of soil, and so those are the rates that we have tested in a lab scenario. One of the things about springtails that seems to make it an appropriate test vessel is the fact that it has been observed that they will ingest plant material. I was thinking that initially, if I mix some of this whole plant material that's really ground up with yeast, that they would just kind of, because it's small enough and it's not really a liquid diet, that they would kind of walk around the plant material and just ingest the yeast. But having observed different concentrations of plant material from, say, 20% all the way up to 90% of their diet composed of plant material, I've seen they're kind of like a transparent, almost white insect. And when they burrow into charcoal substrate, you can see their midgut turning black. And the same thing, I've seen them ingest plant material, and you can see their midguts being sort of this greenish color. So anecdotally, that's kind of telling me that they are ingesting this plant material because there's nothing else green in the container. They also represent, like I said before, a reasonable non-target insect because they inhabit a wide variety of habitats. In addition, their biology, culture, and test system is already known from the chemical side, so it's something that we can compare to as far as results and methods. And again, just to drive the point home, this is a 28-day exposure, which is more than enough time to see any effects from from something that's just causing a starvation, something that might just take 7 days. just to note some in the effect of a BT protein. The earthworms, again, while I haven't observed them to actually eat ingest plant material, that is what they normally eat based on textbooks, and comparing versus a control, they will actually gain weight as opposed to lose weight in some of these test systems, which is something that's suggesting that they are actually ingesting the plant material. Again, they represent a reasonable non-target organism. They share a common ancestor to insects. I remember from my graduate work that some of the ancestors to insects were worm-like, and so it seems to be a reasonable non-target organism because it's also so very common, something you'd see in a plant scenario in the field. Again, just like the springtail, the biology, culture, and the test system is already well known and established, and 14 days would certainly be long enough to see any effects from a protein like this. In addition, this is my last slide, so that works out well. In addition, some of these plant-incorporated proteins in the diet we've taken and actually run assays versus the target insect just to confirm that the diet that these organisms are exposed to contains a biologically active protein, and that's been fairly effective in a number of studies and can be done several ways at the beginning and at the end of studies to, as like a dose confirmation step, and to make sure that during the processing of the diet that the proteins aren't broken down or denatured through either heating or mixing or any other processes. And that was just a quick run through. Any questions?
Thank you, Michael. What is in the artificial soil?
The question was, what is in the artificial soil? The artificial soil is about, it's 35% coarse sand, 35% fine sand, 20% clay, and 10% peat. Are there any other questions? The concentrations of BT in the soil? I think it calculates to about 1.8 milligrams per kilogram of soil. What's that? Kaolin clay, if I'm pronouncing that right.
As you have noted, the title of my presentation has changed a little bit from the one I originally submitted to the program. But I think you guys have already learned about the tiered approach and also the different elements of the design of tier one studies. So what I'm going to do today is I'll be focusing on a meta-analysis of previously published lab effect testing with BT crops to see what we can learn from, you know, there's hundreds of studies out there. Maybe it can help us to, or get us to design a good tier one studies that can be used to predict the risk of GM crops. First, I would like to acknowledge the contribution of my co-authors. Michelle Marbier, she really played a pivotal role in assembling the package, the database for me to run the meta-analysis. And Jonathan Langren, Steve Naranju, and Robin Rose, and Galen Devley have been constantly bugged by me and calling them for ideas, how do we explore the database. Over the past decade, there have been hundreds of studies. Here, this table summarizes all the lab NTU testing with BT product, and BT either BT proteins or pure plant tissues. And these studies include eight major taxonomic, invertebrate taxonomic orders, about six major functional guilds, including pollinators, predators, herbivores, omnivores, and detritivores. Among those non-target organisms tested, most are arthropods, or insects. There is a one, I couldn't see them. Okay, there's no point. This one have Proctaxida as earthworm. For those of you who do not know what this group is, it's we consider earthworm as a detritivores, which play a very important role in degrading decomposing debris of the treated plant. Okay, and those 115 lab studies or reports submitted to EPA for BT crop registration. Usually contain more than one independent test. So there's about 556 independent experiment compare the effect of a BT versus non-BT. Okay. So if you look at the design of those study, I basically characterize these studies in two groups. One is a toxicity-based lab studies, which focus on the evaluation of the direct toxicity of BT cry proteins or BT trait, and these studies are mostly done with pure proteins. Okay, the other type of study I classified as tritrophic interaction studies. Those studies involved assessing the tritrophic interaction between BT plants, plant feeding insect, and their natural enemies, either predators or parasitoids. And those studies are done with pure proteins and most time actually with plant tissues or living plants. So the endpoint measured in those studies most commonly include mortality or survival. Sometimes the same set of organisms also also being measured for growth, development, and reproduction. Some studies also measured behavior and movement, but for the analysis I'm presenting here, the endpoint measured is the mortality, survival, and reproduction. Just for the reason for non-independence, because if you test the group of insects, you measure survival as well as growth or development. It means the measurement of the growth and development is not independent from your mortality, from the measurement of the mortality. So a fundamental question related to the Tier 1 lab and NTU studies, how confident are we to use these lab studies to make a prediction of the risk of BT crops? In the next few slides, I'm going to show you is the result of the meta-analysis to see if we can predict the risk of BT crops. It's kind of a retrospective analysis, but I think we can learn a lot of things. So what is the meta-analysis? Basically, meta-analysis is an evidence-based approach to risk assessment. It is a quantitative research synthesis to analyze the results of a set of studies that test a similar hypothesis. For example, all the Tier 1 studies with BT crops to test if BT protein are toxic or if adversely impact different groups of non-target organisms. There's also different method for meta-analysis. The commonly used method is to use so-called Hedges D. That formula gives you a very simple definition of what is Hedges D. It's basically the difference between your experimental mean versus your control mean. Could be mortality or survival, and standardized by the variability or variation of your study. And it's also adjusted by the GA, which is the sample size. Because when you put all the study together, each study could have different variation and different sample size. So how are you going to standardize to make a quantitative comparison or analysis of the effect of your test material? And also, Hedges D takes into account the variability of each study. So it is more quantitative than other method. So this is the method I used for this presentation. And to look at if the effect size we see for each study is significantly different from zero, we calculate the confidence interval of Hedges D. If zero is within that confidence interval, that means the effect you see is not statistically significant from zero. If zero is outside of the confidence interval, that means the effect size you detect is significantly different from zero. Usually when D is larger than 0.2, the effect size is considered large or moderate. So again, the database analyzed include primary lab studies, which include both toxicity-based and tritrophic interaction assays. The protein in the database are primarily lepidopterin active protein, including CRY1AB, AC, 2AB, CRY1F, that have been used in commercialized BT cotton and BT BT craw. This database includes 6 functional gills in 8 different invertebrate orders. And again, the endpoint measured in the analysis are survival, mortality, and reproduction. All the comparisons between BT and non-BT are independent. That means all the comparison have to come from independent experiment. It's not does not include multiple comparisons from measurement of same set of test organisms. And finally, I also run analysis just to compare what we got from the lab study versus what we got from the field study, which Monsieur Marbier 2007 have published her analysis result in the Journal of Science in April. So this is the first analysis I run. Basically, the y-axis is the effect size, the d, hatch is d, calculate using MetaWin, the software. X-axis is the different non-target orders. From this chart, you can see the first bar is Lepidopter. The hatch d is negative, close to negative 0.7. That means there is a significant adverse effect of these proteins on non-target Lepidopterans, which is expected, right? Because the protein are well known to be Lepidopteran active. But there is no significant effect on Heteroptera, which include both Homopteran and Hemipteran, Coleoptera, Neuroptera. Neuroptera is the lace wings. Most of you know the contradictory story about lace wings. You know, some study shows effect, some study did not show effect, but you put them together, run in meta-analysis, really the effect is not significantly different from zero. Hymenoptera, surprisingly, you saw some significant, even small, the effect on the Hymenoptera. I'm going to come back later to talk about this. Okay? Columella, no effect. Clary, no effect. No effect on earthworms, Hyplopsis taxida. On the top, that's the N. It's how many independent experiments or studies included in the analysis. So the second analysis that I run is I basically lumped this non-target organism by functional guild, or functional groups. Again, here you see the significant effect on herbivores. We know BT protein, BT crops are controlling Lepidopteran plant feeding insects. The effect size became smaller, mainly because this herbivore group include not only Lepidopteran, but also other herbivores, Coleopterans. That's why the effect size was diluted. But it still sees significant adverse effect on herbivores. No effect on omnivores, detritivores, pollinators, predators. But again, the parasitoid showed up here. Remember the effect in the previous figure, the impact on Hymenoptera? Hymenoptera include a large group of test insects, include two functional groups, parasitoid and pollinators. Okay, so pollinator are primary honeybee studies. We did not show any effect. In fact, we run a separate analysis on honeybees with Galen and Michelle. The paper has been accepted by PLOS One. Basically, we did not see any effect of BT protein on honeybees, which is here the pollinators. So the third analysis I run, so I basically, I combined what the field data with the lab data. The field data has have already been analyzed by Michelle, published, but I combined these two databases together. I run a direct comparison for herbivores for different functional groups. Some functional group cannot be compared because there is not enough field study. So like, for example, omnivores, there are simply, there are very few lab studies. You cannot do a comparison. However, for herbivores, there's enough studies for us to compare the hatched bars lab study. You saw significant effect, even smaller. Field studies, you do see the significant adverse effect on herbivores. And here, parasitoid. Here you see significant adverse effect in the lab, and also you see in the field too. I'm going to come back talk about why we saw the effect of BT crops on parasitoids. And detritivores, here there is a reasonable large sample size, and there's no effect. And predators, no effect, both in the lab and in the field. And pollinator and omnivores cannot be compared because there's not enough either lab studies or not enough field studies for us to compare the lab results versus the field results. So why do we see the effect on parasitoids? Basically, I look at first I look at the lab study. Remember, there's two kind of lab studies. One is direct toxicity studies, which involve direct exposure of this parasitoid to a toxin and look for mortality. The other one is a trophic study, which involve exposing the parasitoid to a susceptible host, to a host that is susceptible to BT proteins. I mean, in the trophic study, all the hosts used for the parasitoid are intoxicated by BT proteins. So when you use intoxicated host, what are you going to expect? You're going to see effect on the progeny of the parasitoid. So really the effect, what we see BT protein on parasitoid, is not unexpected if you look at the design. The kind of design right now in the literature are all involved using susceptible target host and the parasitoid, because hosts are intoxicated by BT proteins and the parasitoid progeny cannot develop well. That's why you get lower reproduction. So this is really design, the design related. It's not a direct protein toxicity. It's a trophic interaction related effect. So if you look at this chart, it tells you no surprising at all to see effect on parasitoid, even for the field data. Because when you have, in the field data, I have just recently reviewed a manuscript by Steve and Rolenza. They conducted a meta-analysis of field studies on the different functional guilds. And what they saw also the same effect on parasitoid, which those parasitoids in the field studies so far are primarily a Macrocentrus grandi, or cinculata, which is specialized parasitoid attacking a European corn borer, because the BT corn are very effective in reducing population of BT European corn borer. Of course, you saw a low abundance in the field. So if you see this chart, if your parasitoid, all predators are specialists, are relying on the target pest. If you remove the target pest, of course, there is nothing to feed in the field. You can see lower abundance. So that's why it's very important for us to be cautious when you conduct a field study, how are you going to interpret the results. So I want to conclude my presentation. Basically, what we can see from the meta-analysis that insect set of protein used in BT corn and cotton are target-specific and have no direct toxicity against non-target organisms tested. And the adverse effect on Hymenopteran parasitoid is small and not related to direct toxicity of BT proteins, but possibly related to the trophic interaction with the BT intoxicated host. And this type of trophic effect is not unexpected from any insect control method that is effective in controlling the target pest. And so to answer the question I raised at the beginning of my talk, how confident are we in the predictive ability of Tier 1 NTU studies, especially for BT crops? I would say very confident for the NTUs we have been tested. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Okay. Question then, because what I was surprised when I looked through all the literature is that most of the studies, the tritrophic studies on parasitoids, have actually been done with susceptible hosts. We have exceptionally few studies where people have worked with non-target pests and parasitoids, and that would make a lot of more sense to me, because I mean, who cares about the specialist parasitoids?